Our final case this morning, entitled John Doe versus Mary Ronan, Cincinnati Public Schools and the Ohio Department of Education. Mr. McDowell.
If I may have 5 minutes for rebuttal, please, Your Honor. Chief Justice Brown, and may it please the court, my colleagues, Sarah Heron and Kimberly Beck, and I have worked pro bono on Mr. Doe and many other people's case for many years now because we strongly feel that the law and the statutory scheme pursuant to which Mr. Doe and others were terminated from their employment is unconstitutional. This court has before it two questions which were certified by the Federal Southern District of Ohio to the court dealing with whether this statutory scheme is constitutional or not under the retroactive clause of the Ohio Constitution and under the contracts clause of the Ohio Constitution. And we submit that under both provisions, it is unconstitutional. When we look at the background of Mr. Doe, it's particularly egregious. Mr. Doe was convicted of an offense in 1976 when he was 28 years old. At the time of his termination, he was 62 years old and 3 years away from retirement. He had worked at the Cincinnati Public Schools for 11 years. He had received only good evaluations. Indeed, he had been promoted to a better job than he initially was hired for. Mr. Doe also had his conviction, his 1976 conviction, expunged. Mr. Doe is a rehabilitated man. Indeed, when he was working initially for the school, he was working as a safe and drug-free school specialist in 1997, a job that he was particularly suited for because he could bring his real-world experience to bear with the children. At the time of his termination, he was a hearing officer, and he had no direct contact with students of the school except in the presence of their parents. Basically, if a child had been suspended and they wanted to appeal that, child and his parents could come before Mr. Doe, and he would hear the case and determine whether or not the child should be suspended. That was his job. As a result of the statutory scheme, and only as a result of the statutory scheme, Mr. Doe was terminated. I think it's also important for this court to know that the statutory scheme in question now has been amended, and under the amendment, the amendment in this case, Mr. Doe probably would not be terminated because he would be able to demonstrate that he was rehabilitated. Judge Barrett of the Southern District stated that Mr. Doe was rehabilitated. Basically, the new scheme permits people who are convicted of these drug offenses to look back, if it's longer than 10 years, and determine whether or not they were rehabilitated. Mr. Doe was never given that opportunity.
Counsel,
I'd like to ask you a question about the amendment. It appears that it was not another change in the statute. I mean, it was a change in the statute, but then the statute relied upon an administrative regulation of the Department of Education.
Yes, sir.
They did not change the administrative regulation for a period of time.
Correct.
Something.
5 months after he was terminated.
Yeah, 5 months later. So it wasn't a legislative change. It was the administrative regulation didn't catch up with the statutory change. Would that be a correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Basically, when they enacted the law, they followed the laws that the statutory scheme as it existed for other employees and just applied it to these people. And then I would assume that once people realized the egregious effect, they went back and they amended it. But that was too late for Mr. Doe. Mr. Doe had already lost his job.
Although, counsel, Mr. Doe could apply now and potentially be rehired. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. However, if he were rehired, he would start at the end. Like he was a brand new employee, he would lose his tenure. He would lose a lot of his benefits and his rights. And Mr. Doe shouldn't have to be in that position because
and he is currently receiving retirement benefits. Is that correct as well?
Yes, Your Honor. At I believe a lesser amount than he would have had he been able to continue to work until his full retirement age.
Right. One of the things I wondered, I know that the opposing side is relying heavily on Section 34, Article 2 of the Ohio Constitution, which, of course, is the super section relating to the comfort and welfare of employees. And, of course, not only can this be a positive thing, it also can be a negative thing, as we've seen in the AAU case. Would you respond to that? Because I wasn't clear on what your position is with respect to that particular section of the Constitution.
Our position is that it absolutely, positively, in no way would require these laws to be constitutional, that it does not apply to the facts and circumstances of this case, Your Honor. Our position is, first and foremost, is that that question is not before this court. That is not one of the certified questions, and we don't feel that the court should ever even get to the issue of whether Section 34, Article 2 applies to the facts of this case. However, should the court decide to look at that issue, we would first and foremost say, well, let's look at what does Section 34, Article 2 say. What is the plain language? And the plain language deals with regulation of hours, minimum wage, and providing for the comfort, health, safety, and general welfare of employees. This statutory scheme was clearly not dealing with minimum wage or hours of labor, and it did not deal with employees. As stated in their briefs, it dealt with the protection of students, not the protection of employees. And so we would say, if you look at the plain language of the statute or the constitutional provision, it does not apply at all to this case.
Although AAUP talked about the burdens that could be imposed on employees as well. So it seemed to suggest that it's much broader than what you have just stated.
Well, I think that in AAUP, what happened is someone was trying to strike down a law saying, well, you're trying to increase people's wages, and this law was designed to protect workers from having their wages meddled with. And the court said, no, it's not limited to that. The legislature can impose more burdens on workers, as well as lift burdens from workers. But it did not say, but again, we're dealing with workers. So I agree that it did say that it could go both ways, but it still dealt with workers, employees, and not other people, not people of the general public, Your Honor.
Would you agree, though, if this section were to apply, then the retroactivity section is not going to affect the decision?
Yes, ma'am. I think it's very clear that it's a super section of the Ohio Constitution, and if it applies, then you don't even look at any other aspect of constitutionality. And I think that's why this court should be leery of broadening the scope beyond what it already is for Section 34, because it could become a provision that swallows the rest of the Constitution. And I think this court should be leery of letting it expand beyond what it clearly says. So I think we need to look at the language of the code and stick with that.
Counsel, between your two arguments, which one do you think is the stronger, the retroactive application or the contract?
Retroactive application, Your Honor. I believe the retroactive application is a two-part test, and I think this statute clearly meets the two-part test as being unconstitutional.
The first part being they intended it to be retroactive.
Yes, sir.
And they clearly did.
Yes, sir.
All right. So that brings us then to the second part.
And the second part is whether it deals with a substantive right or not. And I think this court and the United States Supreme Court has stated that public employees have a substantive right in their job, absent committing some offense that's already stated that would get them terminated. So they have a substantive right in their jobs. I think that's very clear. There's a long line of cases that talks about that. So
is that true of all employees, or is that true here because there are a number of statutes and contracts involved with respect to Mr. Doe's employment?
Clearly, it's not true of all employees in all jobs in the state of Ohio. It would not apply to an at-will employee. However, Mr. Doe was not an at-will employee. He had a property right or a contract right in his job. He had a substantive right to continued employment in the absence of committing a felony while employed or being drunk while employed or some other act of misfeasance, nonfeasance, while he was employed.
But he was not subject to a continuing contract, was he?
No, Your Honor.
He signed a contract after the law went into effect.
That is true, Your Honor.
And your position with respect to the impairment of contract, your second proposition, really, how would that be that he signed a contract after the law was already in effect? How would that be an interference with a contract that wasn't yet in existence?
Because this court and other courts have held that those public employees, pursuant to the statute that gives them that right, that it is a contract right. They don't necessarily need to have
it. In other words, the contract he was on before the law changed expired. Then the law changed, and then he signed a new contract. I guess what I'm trying to find out is, how does the signing of the new contract after the law changed
I would submit that pursuant to this court's case law, that you have to be under the existing contract at the time the law goes into effect. That's not the situation here, as aptly pointed out in their briefs. However, it is our position that pursuant to Revised Code 124.34 and or pursuant to Ohio Revised Code 3319.081, that he had a contract right to that job. That is, they could not terminate.
I ask you, he wasn't on a continuing contract, but you think he had a right to have another one?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, he had a right. He had a contract right pursuant to that. They couldn't just terminate him like, your contract's done, go home. They had to continue his employment absent one of the statutory or schemes that says, you know, if, as a public employee, you can be fired for A, B, C, and D. What happened here is they've added an E that was never in existence.
And to pick up on Justice Cupp's point, the regulations that have been amended really moot out this case so that really there'll be some discretion to avoid this circumstance that befell your client from befalling others.
I would say it doesn't moot out this case. But
me, please.
I would say it does not moot this case because he was terminated from his job and he can't get the
same. We understand the facts of your case, but we're trying to write rules of law and make an application out of the facts of this case that will apply to everyone who's employed similarly in the state of Ohio. And the question I have for you is, the circumstances of this case are not likely to ever be repeated because your client was caught, as Justice Cupp pointed out, in a 5-month window when those regulations hadn't come up. So this isn't likely to happen anymore.
It is not likely to happen anymore to people in Mr. Doe's situation because presumably he would be able to demonstrate that he is rehabilitated as he demonstrated to the court, which expunged his conviction as he demonstrated to Justice Barrett.
So whatever holding we make in this case is really limited to anyone who might be caught in that similar 5-month window.
Yes, sir. And there are many of them.
Pardon me, please?
And there are many of them. There are many of them. And so I see I only have 2 minutes left, so I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. McDowell. Mr. Marty, 10 minutes.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, for police, the court has indicated I'd like to use 10 minutes on behalf of the state and reserve 5 minutes for Cincinnati. Your Honors, it's the state's position that this constitutional challenge fails for two independently controlling reasons. First, Section 28 does not come into the mix because this statute fits within the authorization provided by Article 2, Section 34. Secondly, we don't think that a substantive element of Section 28 can be shown here, and that is that the law impaired a preexisting right. But let me turn first to Section 34. This court held in the pension fund case that a Section 28 challenge fails as a matter of law if the statute is enacted pursuant to the authority given by Section 34. We think this statute falls within the plain language of Section 34 and this court's decisions outlining its parameters. The text of Section 34 authorizes legislation dealing with the comfort and safety of workers, among other things. We think the legislature could reasonably conclude that other workers in the Cincinnati School District and other school districts would feel uncomfortable, unsafe working alongside a known felon.
But that's
was that
not
the intent of protecting other workers or protecting students?
Your Honor, I will give you the fact that the primary thrust of this legislation was protecting other students. But remember, we're here on a constitutional challenge. And in such challenges, every presumption has to be afforded in favor of the statute. And if there's any reasonable basis, constitutional basis, it has to be sustained. Here we're within the plain text of the Constitution, comfort and safety. Furthermore, this Court's decisions were well within the scope of this, what this Court has said Section 34 means. The most comprehensive definition, or excuse me, the most limited comprehensive definition.
Counsel, just wait a minute. Doesn't the subsequent pulling back on the requirement for the discharge and the ability to show rehabilitation undercut your argument that there was an inherent danger to the other workers?
I don't think you have an inherent danger requirement under Section 34. All we have to show is that it's in the subject matter of comfort and safety, and the legislature has discretion as to what is necessary and what isn't. And really, this statute falls well within the limits that this Court has drawn for Section 34. Probably the most narrow definition, considered definition, is found in the dissent in the City of Lima case. And the language that the Court adopted there was, I believe, work-related requirements, or what was suggested there. And this is a work-related requirement. It tells us who gets to work in this environment and who other folks are going to have to work with. Further, this Court has upheld things under 34 that are far more tenuously related to the workplace. The pension fund case, for example, didn't deal with what happened in the shop floor or the office. It dealt with which of several government bureaucracies was going to administer a public pension fund. We see the same thing in the Rocky River and the Central Ohio Transit Authority cases. Those weren't workplace matters. The issues were statutes that resolved disputes between lawyers haggling over a collective bargaining agreement. So this goes much closer to the core of the workplace, and hence Section 34, than those other laws that this Court found to be within 34. If we're within 34, we just don't get to 28.
Okay. Let's assume that you're not.
Okay.
And take you to 28.
Very good, Your Honor.
You don't disagree that the legislature intended to make this retroactive?
No, it was clearly retroactive.
Yeah. That leaves us, is it substantive or is it not?
And we think it's not substantive, and let me explain why. To trigger either the retroactivity or the contract clauses, petitioner needs to show that this law interfered with a pre-existing right of some sort, and they rely upon the same right for both clauses. That is, the supposed right to tenure under the civil service statutes. They point to two statutes, neither of which provided him with the right of tenure. The first is 3319.081. But that doesn't apply to folks that work for city school districts like Cincinnati, so it's textually inapplicable. The second statute is 124.34, and it has never provided tenure for folks that engage in immoral conduct or a failure of good behavior. And I don't think anyone would dispute the proposition that felony drug dealing that results in prison time is a failure of good behavior. That was on the books before Mr. Doe's conviction occurred. So we have no pre-existing tenure right to disturb here. Given that, there's no Section 28 claim.
But for the offense, which has been expunged, he would have a right to continued new contracts.
Your Honor, I believe
absent bad behavior on.
Well, I think the operative word there is that behavior, regardless of whether you have a conviction that results from it. It's the underlying conduct. The conviction just evidences that behavior.
Okay. I'm laying aside that. Employees doing the work he was doing and having gotten through that 1 or 2 or 3 year period without having been terminated, from that point on, get a new contract each and every year or every 2 years or however often they do it, right?
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree. That's
they can't be terminated without cause.
The new contract concept only applies under 3319.081, which does not apply to city school districts like Cincinnati. So I don't know that we get there, Your Honor.
Well, then they have a bargaining agreement that does the same thing. right?
Well, we have no evidence of that in this record, Your Honor. But I get your point. You're driving at whether the conviction occurs after employment. Is that where you're going with that?
No. I'm getting at whether, lay aside convictions, whether or not other people similarly situated who don't have this problem have a contractual right to continued employment.
Well, I guess it would depend upon the circumstances of their particular employment. I mean,
they do, don't they?
Well, I'm not trying to be difficult, Your Honor.
As opposed, he's not an at-will employee.
In this case, he is, because he's engaged in conduct that the statute says eliminates.
I'm laying aside that. I'm trying to establish people with his job title have something other than at-will employment.
If they don't engage in that behavior, you're right, Your Honor.
Right. That's all I'm trying to establish. At this
point. So you're saying that
determination of the contract, he has the right to expect, or someone in the same job classification and duties, the right to expect a renewal of a contract?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm not talking about a contract. I'm talking about statutory rights under 124. The contract is a separate issue, and I think petitioners conceded that his contract was formed after the statute was enacted, if I'm understanding him correctly.
Okay.
That's certainly the facts here.
And your argument is that the passage of the statute inserted a new condition that automatically became part of the new contract when he signed it?
Well, as to the contract clause claim, because the contract was after the statute, the contract clause just doesn't apply because it can't impair a post-enactment statute. As to the existence of the statutory right, we're saying the statute always provided that if you engage in this type of conduct, you have no right to tenure. Before this statute was enacted, before his conviction occurred back in the 70s, it's always been Ohio law to that point.
Mr. Marty, you touched at one point on a question that I wanted to explore, and that is whether the conviction, the felony here, occurred during employment or many, many years prior to employment. And is there a distinction under 124.34 in when that conviction occurred?
The statute doesn't speak to it one way or the other. So I think its literal language would cover this provision. And again, that
cover
language
not
has been
only
on the
a
books.
Conviction committed during employment, but you think that it would allow for removal even for a for an old conviction?
There's nothing in the text of the statute that would preclude that, Your Honor. So I think it's a fair construction of the statute. But again, we don't get there because of Section 34. So,
Mr. Marty, I just want to go back to something. I might have misunderstood
sure.
what you were saying, but if you have a one-year contract, it's completed, are you saying that that individual then is entitled to another one-year contract?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
I mean, that's what I'm confused about.
Right,
if the term is there, and unless there's a clause in the contract that says you're entitled to a new contract, once it's over, is it not?
That's correct, Your Honor. But this whole idea of contracts and continuing expectations of contracts doesn't apply to city school districts.
Right.
So that concept just doesn't fit in this circumstance. Instead, if you have a contract, the term is what the contract says it is.
Okay.
What weight do we give to the fact this conviction is 34 years old and this man's performed ostensibly in this capacity without blemish and has received recommendations and favorable comments throughout his employment?
Well, you know, the statute says what it says, and there's no provision for that. Although I should say that the administrative regulations do allow him to reapply and to have that those sort of factors considered.
Do those regulations authorize the employing agency to reinstate past service and bring him up to a level where had they been enacted earlier, he may not have been terminated or may have applied for some special consideration?
The regulations don't speak to that one way or another, so they certainly don't preclude that, Your Honor.
So there's a possibility anyway that if he would reapply, there'd be some opportunity for consideration of reinstatement of past.
There's nothing in the regulations that precludes that. I think counsel for Cincinnati could give you a more informed answer on that.
Thank you, Mr. Marty.
Thank you. Mr. Marty, thank you. Go ahead.
No. No, go ahead.
Mr. Stepaniak?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. My name is Mark Stepaniak. I represent Cincinnati Public Schools and Superintendent Mary Ronan.
Good. Now explain to us whether or not he was an at-will employee.
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
But
why not?
He has a series of one-year contracts. Those contracts have both an explicit and implicit provision that says that his employment with the Cincinnati Public Schools complies with state law. The contract itself says that upon certification by the state, he can be reemployed. And every contract in the state has to incorporate the provisions of state law.
But
the Cincinnati Public
Schools. But he has an expectation, a legal expectation of continued employment.
He has.
As long as he doesn't have the violation like is in question here.
He has no vested interest in unchangeable employment. He has no vested interest in unregulated employment.
But he has a vested interest in continued employment with the Cincinnati.
Subject to the laws that govern public employees in the schools.
And does the fact that his record was expunged have nothing to do with this statute?
I would say it doesn't, Your Honor, and
for
this reason. The statute itself makes it clear that rather than the city school district performing its own records check, that the incumbents and applicants have to get records checks through BCI and the FBI, which turns up convictions that are expunged.
But they're not supposed to, are they?
No, they do, and they're intended to. That's the reason you do that rather than hiring a background checking company or going to the courthouse.
So the expungement law doesn't mean anything then?
Not in this context, according to the General Assembly. And we submit that is not an improper retroactive application of the law. And an example makes it obvious. He doesn't have a vested right to unregulated employment. Let's say next week the General Assembly says, you know, we've been having a lot of school bus accidents, and some of them appear to relate to the inability of these drivers to hear. Let's have a minimum hearing threshold for school bus drivers to protect the public and students. And some driver says, wait a minute. I've been employed here 10 years as a driver, and my hearing's always been bad. I can't pass that test. You, General Assembly, cannot regulate the hearing of school bus drivers because to do so would be a retroactive law.
Mr. Stepaniak, is there any evidence in this record that the school board knew prior to the enactment of the legislative change of the criminal history of Mr. Employee in this case?
I don't think that's in the record, Your Honor, but I do admit that the Cincinnati Public Schools did only what they were required to do by the laws that existed at that time, which, of course, landed us in court. You had, Justice O'Donnell, had raised an issue about whether this is a very narrow case because, gosh, he sort of falls in the interstices, you know, this brief little period. Well, that's not true because he laments not being able to use the 10-year rule as it relates to drug convictions. Well, what about folks with a 9-year-old conviction, right? They won't be able to be rehabilitated under the new August 09 rehabilitation standards. And so they would be able to make the claim that if this is unconstitutionally retroactive, that it's unconstitutionally retroactive to them or anyone else who's excluded by the new regulations, or who can't make the rehabilitation showing under the new regulations.
What about Justice O'Donnell's question about reinstatement versus he has to start fresh if he can now qualify?
There's nothing in the ODE regs, as I see it, that provides for reinstatement. But I think it's worth pointing out, Your Honor, that the two issues certified to you relate to whether or not this statute is unconstitutional under Section 28 as impermissibly retroactive or impairing contracts. He has other claims. He has constitutional due process claims, substantive and procedural, that are before the district court. So it's not as if
really
he's remedying.
That's really not relevant to the question. The question is, can he reapply? Yes or
no? Oh, yeah, absolutely he can reapply.
And
no
is
question.
There any ability of the school board to reinstate his tenure if they would reemploy him or consider bringing him back to the level that he was, having served 32 years in this position with an unblemished record other than this prior conviction from 1976?
Well, as you know from the record, the school district allowed him to stay on sick leave and exhaust all of his sick leave, and he's currently drawing his pension. I don't think the Cincinnati School District has the authority to reinstate his pension or do any of those other things, absent a court order that they violated the law. So
the answer is no.
I don't think so.
He would yes, not.
Well, that would sounds right to me, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stanek. Mr. McDowell, you have just over 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Hard to get out.
Representing many of these people, one of the problems that we run into, not all school districts take the position that Cincinnati Public Schools do, and some have sought to bring these people back, and we deal with collective bargaining agreements that state, you know, people, if they're just reapplying, they can't get their old jobs back. We've actually asked Cincinnati Public Schools to give Mr. Doe back his position, and we've heard nothing from them. The other thing the statute says is 124 states that his pay cannot be reduced once he falls under the statute of 124. And so if he did come back, he would have to come back in our position at the same pay rate that he was before, not as a new employee. But that's not what we're finding. We're finding that he just has no opportunity to get his job back at all. And I think when we back to the Section 34, is that there's nothing in the statutory history of this case that says that the legislature, the General Assembly, passed it pursuant to the Section 34, Article 2. All their briefs and everything that was said has always stated that this was passed to help and protect students, nothing with regard to employees whatsoever.
Is that an unreasonable interpretation, though, of Section 34 to take into consideration workers?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I think that
The limitation? You know, Section 34, at least the way we've treated it recently, is a pretty, you know, broad provision, and we've treated it as such. So the argument that was made by opposing counsel was that it's not unreasonable to say that not only is this done for the purposes of protecting children, students, but there's benefit to coworkers.
And I think, though, as someone from the court pointed out, then why would they change it? Why did they change it? Because Mr. Doe wouldn't have lost his job. And perhaps any law they pass may have some tangential relationship to workers. And the power of Section 34 is so great that I think this court should be leery of that and look for, is this really the reason why this was passed? For example, there was the case where cabooses had to be added to the end of trains because workers on trains, it was a hard job, it was unsafe, and so forth. What they want to add is not a caboose to the end of the train, but a dining car on the train for passengers of the train. And say, well, because people, workers on the train could also use the dining car, then that's okay, too. That's not what this court has ever said. We look at the statute and we look at the plain language of the statute and see whether it falls within the statute. This does not. I keep saying statute, I mean constitutional amendment.
Counsel, if we get beyond Section 34, their argument is he had no substantive, this does not retroactively impair a substantive right.
That is their argument, and they are incorrect, Your Honor, because it does. They admitted that it applied retroactively, so we've already passed the first part of the test, and they've gone back and forth with you and others as to whether it was a substantive right. This court has clearly stated that it is a substantive right. He could not have been terminated.
If I understand their argument, it is a substantive right, but it isn't for him. Is that basically it?
That's basically it, Your Honor.
Because he has this criminal conviction.
Right. But what they're getting into is that it's a great law, it's a good law, but that's not part of the two-part test. A two-part test is it retroactive? Does it violate a substantive right? And we stop there. We don't look at is it a great law or not? Does it have a noble and great purpose or not? So we stop there, and we meet the first two parts of those tests. We meet the test. It is a unconstitutional retroactive law. And we respectfully request that this court find it to be unconstitutional. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDowell.